Welcome to the ProWrestling.net All Access Daily Podcast. I'm Jason Powell, and coming up on Friday night is the Ring of Honor Final Battle pay-per-view. And right after this break for non-members, I will be speaking with the last real man, Silas Young. Ring of Honor Final Battle, Friday night, Fight TV, and traditional television pay-per-view. A four-way elimination match for the TV title is on the card, with Kenny King defending against Punishment Martinez, Shane Taylor, and our guest, the last real man, Silas Young. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolute pleasure. Hey, you beat Mark Briscoe in 2012. 2 years ago, you beat Dalton Castle. Last year, you beat Jushin Liger. Are we looking at the beginning of an Undertaker-like WrestleMania kind of streak for you on Ring of Honor's biggest show of the year?
You know, I think it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because I had actually had taped some promos a while back, and I had mentioned that exact same thing. It really feels like Final Battle has been my show. You know, like you said, not only did I beat Mark Briscoe, one of the Ring of Honor originals, I beat him in a leather strap match, and I also beat Dalton Castle, and I also beat a legend in Jushin Thunder Liger. I feel like if there's any show where I have an edge, I think it's our Final Battle.
Mr. Final Battle. I like that. Now, I know you've been in a lot of, you know, ROH has a lot of four-corner survival-style matches. This one is actually an elimination match, and I think just four ways in general, I think it's easy for us as viewers to kind of take for granted how difficult they are, because they seem to go off without a hitch in most cases. But from a wrestler perspective, how much more difficult are these matches to lay out, and how much time goes into that compared to, say, just a regular singles match?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. The four ways, the five ways, the six ways, they're definitely a different animal. So it's a different approach to, you know, doing matches like that. You know, but from a competitor standpoint, you know, I'm kind of happy that it's an elimination, because that means to lose this match, you actually have to be pinned or submitted. You know, I'm looking at that as, yeah, I have to beat three other guys, but I'm a smart man, and I know how to do business, and I think I'm going to be letting some of these guys do the work while I go ahead and do what I do, and that's win.
Gotcha. Are you heavily involved in that process of laying things out, or are you more of a guy who just kind of sits back and takes the marching orders?
No, all the guys there are, we're all there because we're good at what we do. One of the best things about working for Ring of Honor is the ability to really have a lot of input and have a lot of creative freedom. So all of us that are there, we're all definitely having a lot of input into everything that we do.
And is that something that's changed for you? I mean, you've been with the company on and off for many years now, but, you know, early, is it something where a newer guy comes in, he might not have that, but as time goes on, you really start to develop more trust in others around you?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a little bit of that everywhere in the business. You know, you build a rapport with guys, and you know, the more you work with someone, or the longer you know them, the more you trust them, or, you know, the more you get to understand how they think. So, you know, I think that's just natural. But the guys that even guys that come in that are new, you know, they're usually really respected guys. You know, Ring of Honor definitely has, you know, been a breeding ground for the best talent in wrestling, you know, period, worldwide. I mean, you look at, you know, any big company, that any company right now in wrestling, and their top guys at one time, you know, applied their craft in the Ring of Honor ring. So, you know, when guys come there, they're not just coming there because they're not coming there by accident, let's say. You know, there's a reason that they're there. So I think there's usually a little bit extra trust there, whereas opposed to if you're going somewhere for a first time and meeting someone that you've never heard of or never worked with before.
What would winning the ROH TV title mean to you?
I think it would mean satisfaction. It would be kind of a nice little screw you to the Ring of Honor office. You know, they've always I've had this beef with Jay Lethal about Jay Lethal gets all these commercial spots, all these, you know, all these media opportunities. And, you know, I said it earlier this year, I said I was better than him. I got in his face about it. And I proved it over the course of a couple of months when I beat him in a last man standing match. And I feel like this will just be kind of an exclamation point and a nice way to finish off the year, proving that I am exactly what I say I am.
Right. And you revealed in past interviews that you were a heroin addict and pro wrestling actually helped you overcome that addiction. I think it's an amazing story. Were you always a pro wrestling fan, or did you kind of catch the bug at that time in your life?
No, I mean, I had five older brothers, so I was definitely a fan of it as a kid growing up. And it's always been in my blood. But I mean, I basically the thing with the drugs was I was just, you know, I grew up in a pretty rich white middle class area of Wisconsin. I always joke and say that if you were poor in the town that I grew up on, that meant you just had the basic cable package. So. It was just a bunch of kids with money, and there was drugs around, and I just kind of fell into it because I was bored and I wasn't doing anything better with my life. And then, finally after a couple of years, I realized, you know, I needed to do something better with myself. And I kind of fell back into wrestling. So I had a buddy in high school who had done it, and I started talking to him again, and he was telling me how he was training, and then I went and saw his first match, and that was where I decided I'm gonna really clean my stuff up, and I'm gonna start training, and that's exactly what I did.
How old were you at that point?
I think I was like 19 or 20.
Okay, so you got into the business pretty young, and I mean, are you approaching then 20 years in the business?
It'll be 16 in March.
Wow, very cool. Now,
time flies by.
Yeah, no kidding. I've always thought, you know, the last real man character, it's great as a heel. Eventually there's going to come a time when you're going to become a fan favorite, a baby face, if you will. I would assume you're up for that. Would you be open to incorporating your story of addiction into that and sharing that? I mean, you've said it publicly, but it's never made its way to television.
Yeah, man, I'm open to anything. I think the wrestling business, some of the best stuff about wrestling is when you take real life stuff and you mix it in, you know, it's not, you know, people can feel that more.
Tell me about the origins of the last real man gimmick, because I believe you've credited a family member as being kind of the inspiration for this.
Yeah, it's my father.
Really?
It's my father to it. The slick back hair, the mustache, my dad raised six boys, no girls. And, we were all kind of badass kids. So, you know, he was kind of a take no crap type of guy. And, there's stories about him beating up some of my older brother's friends. I remember when we were younger, maybe about 15 or something like that, one of my buddies smarted off to him. My dad grabbed him, threw him up against the house, lifted him up off his feet. So, you know, he was kind of a take no crap type of dude. And, he also wasn't afraid to speak his mind. So it's it's after my father, but it also, just joking about stuff, you know, I mean, I'm 37 years old, and I'm kind of a little bit of a older dude in sense. Maybe I act a little bit older than I am, but sometimes, you know, you just see stuff that men are doing nowadays. And you think, like, man, if my dad would have seen men doing that when he was a kid, he would have crapped himself. Or, you know, just stuff that men do nowadays that, you know, our fathers or our grandfathers would have just shook their heads at, you know.
So you grow up in Wisconsin, and your dad has these qualities. You ever watch the show That 70s Show?
Yep.
How similar is your dad to Red Foreman?
Kind of a lot like that.
Is your dad still with us?
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, I think, what's today? The 13th? I think it's his birthday today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I gotta give him a call and wish him a happy birthday after this, actually.
And will he just grumble at you and hang up on you?
Oh, no, he's mellowed out now.
Oh, good.
I mean, I'm the youngest of my family, so my dad's older. My dad's like, I think he's 77 today, maybe.
Man, wow. And what does he think of the gimmick?
He thinks it's great. It's funny, you know, when I first started, you know, my dad was like, oh, what are you going to do that fake wrestling crap for? you know, and then, but, you know, now over the years of, you know, getting some success and getting to travel and make some money, you know, now he, I think he thinks it's pretty cool, so.
Very cool. I really enjoyed the last Real Man and Dalton Castle feud. I just thought that was a breakout feud for you. And it was such a natural feud, but given the dynamic of the characters and this being the wrestling industry, there was a little bit of concern that, all right, something could cross the line here and become a little insensitive. I thought you guys walked through it perfectly, but I'm curious, how mindful of that were you guys going into that? That you didn't want to offend people, but, you know, you wanted to push the envelope a little, but not offend.
You know, that it was discussed a little bit, you know, we're guys, so we joked around about, you know, ridiculous things that we couldn't say and, you know, stuff like that. But, you know, I did cut one promo at one point where, you know, I said, you know, I don't like the lifestyle that you and them boys have been living together. And I thought that, you know, really walked the line perfectly,
yeah.
You know, but even going into it, I thought, oh, I don't know, I might catch some flack for this one. So, but, you know, you're right, especially in, you know, that was a year or 2 years ago, like in 2017, if that would have happened, I don't know if that would have flown as well. Cause I mean, people have become more and more sensitive about stuff. You know, not saying that there's, you know, not some right there, but I feel like in some areas things have gotten to the point where, you know, I think it's weird that in pro wrestling, you know, we're putting on a show and we're characters, you know, the person I am at home with my family is different than Silas Young in the ring, you know.
Right.
So I always think it's funny that, you know, as wrestlers, performers, or characters, that we can do stuff in the ring and people be like, oh my God, can you believe he did that or whatever? But you can watch a movie like, you know, Django Unchained, where there's white people dropping the N-bomb constantly, and people take into context that, well, yeah, that's a movie, they're playing a character, but no one sits there and thinks like, Leonardo DiCaprio is now this biggest racist guy in the world because he does that, you know? So it is weird how, you know, 20, 30 years back, wrestling was all about pushing the envelope, you know, but like, I mean, Jesus, during the first, Gulf War, you had our American hero, Sergeant Slaughter, turn heel and join, you know, the Iranians or whatever, the Iraqis. And, you know, like, that stuff nowadays would be considered super insensitive. You know what I mean? So it's weird how wrestling's changed like that. And you definitely have to keep all that stuff in mind nowadays.
Yeah. And there was some pushback for Sergeant Slaughter even back in the day, you know, that didn't sit well with some people. It just kind of felt like they were maybe exploiting the situation. And I think it was one of the first times that people really started to, on a grander scale, started to kind of fight back a little bit against that. Why do you think it is, though, that, you know, I've kind of looked at, like, the Muhammad Hassan character, if you remember that from WWE, and he's out there playing a Muslim role with Daivari, and,
right.
You know, I'm guessing around the same time, maybe even the exact same time, you had 24, they, you know, the television series, they were doing things like that. Maybe there was some pushback for 24, but not widespread. It was a very popular show. So why do you think there are different rules for pro wrestling?
I don't know. It's weird. Maybe because it's performance art, and you're asking people to suspend disbelief. Maybe because it's live. I don't know. It is weird though. It's and this is just a conversation that me and a couple of buddies were having maybe in the last couple of weeks about, like, my one buddy says, he goes, pro wrestling is the fakest thing in the world until it gets too real for people. Then it's the realest thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was kind of the whole thing that started the discussion. I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it's a little bit of just how society has changed and stuff like that, that they don't feel like that's acceptable. Whereas maybe in a movie or something it is. But I mean, but to be fair though, even like I made the Django Unchained comment about, you know, Leo being in there and him dropping the N-bomb. Like, to be fair, Quentin Tarantino did. I remember hearing a lot of stuff that a lot of people weren't happy with Quentin Tarantino, that there was so much use of that word in the movie, you know?
That's true. Yeah, there was. You're right. I do remember that. Tell me about Beer City Bruiser. How far do you guys go back? I'm guessing the Wisconsin indie scene, but I don't know the story.
Yeah, no, I've known Beer City Bruiser pretty much since I started. He was, you know, I'm pretty sure he was booked on, like, the first show that I was booked on, so... Yeah, I've known him forever.
And do you guys travel then together and all of that?
A little bit. I've lived in Milwaukee for like the last, 14 years now, 14 and a half years. So, I mean, I've lived down here a good chunk of my career. I mean, we've traveled together. We've worked together a lot, been on different shows. We typically just end up, like our locations where we live is a little bit different. Like he lives out in Waukesha. I live on the south side of Milwaukee. So we usually just end up riding with different people. But I mean, when we're doing the Ring of Honor stuff though, we're traveling together all the time.
Yeah. And was that something where you guys came in together? Did you push to get him in? I don't remember how that all came to be.
No, I mean, I did the top prospect tournament in the beginning of 2013. And then, like summer of that year, I pretty much started full time for him, where I was basically booked on like every show. And that was, 2013, 14, 15, 16, whatever, 17. I basically been with him, you know, full time or whatever, booked for him all the time. But this year just started exclusively. I'm not exactly sure when Bruiser came in. I do remember they were using me as single, you know, I was doing a lot of single stuff and they liked what I was doing. And then they approached me and they said, hey, you know, because, you know, they do those tryout camps, right?
Yeah.
So the tryout camps are actually a good thing. I know, you know, some people kind of crap on tryout camps or seminars or whatever. I always say it's up to individual guys to decide. But, you know, they do actually use most of the guys that get used are guys that have come through those tryout camps. So there is some validity to it. So I mean, Bruiser is a good example. He's a guy who's been wrestling longer than me. I think he's been around about 18 years maybe, but he went and did one of those camps. I didn't even know he was doing the camp. I mean, like I said, I've known him forever, but he hadn't mentioned anything to me about it. But he did the tryout camp and I guess they liked him, and you know, so the Ring of Honor bookers or management or whatever approached me and said, hey, you know, we have this guy who did the camp, you know, we'd like to put them together with you and you kind of make you guys like a tag team and kind of like a little crew together or whatever. And I was like, yeah, who is it? And they told me, I was like, oh yeah, hell yeah. I was like, I've known Bruiser forever. So, I mean, that was kind of, you know, something that was their idea, but it's worked out perfectly. I think we have a good rapport together, and the more and more that we've worked.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. It's been real good that way. So,
what do you prefer, singles or tag? Do you have a preference?
You know what? I like both. It depends. I mean, singles is always good because, I mean, you get more of the airtime. But at the same time, I like the dynamic of doing a tag, too. It's good. I like mixing it up.
And I know you've done a little bit of enhancement work for WWE over the years. Is that getting to WWE, is that still a career goal, or would you be very content to finish your career with Ring of Honor?
Here, you know, you asked earlier in this interview about, you know, having input on stuff. For me and a lot of guys in this business, having input in what you're doing is huge because, you know, we're all creative people. You know, wrestling by a lot of people isn't looked at, you know, as kind of this lowbrow, white trash entertainment, but you know, wrestling is it's an art form. It's more of an art form than a sport. You know, we're out there and we're performing.
Absolutely.
And we're trying to tell a story. We're trying to entertain people. You're trying to get them to suspend disbelief. You're trying to get people, you know, to be super excited and super let down. And you know, you're trying to get them to ride this emotional roller coaster. So for myself and probably pretty much every other guy, having that creative input in doing what you're doing is huge for us. So working at a place like Ring of Honor is, it's awesome. You know, you have so much input in what you do. I mean, well, myself and Dalton Castle, we're doing the program that we did together. We had so much input on stuff that we even got a finish to a pay-per-view match changed because we thought it would be better that way. So,
oh, cool.
So, I mean, the point is, you know, the office there, the guys that are there, they believe in us. So for me, that's huge. You know, I wouldn't say no. I would never, you know, think about the idea of WWE because that's ridiculous. Who wouldn't? You know, I mean, we all want to do this on the biggest scene possible. But I think for me, as old as I am and stuff like that, it would have to be a situation where, you know, they kind of came knocking on my door opposed to me. knocking on theirs. You know, I think there's a big difference there. But right now, you know, I'm super happy with what I'm doing. You know, Ring of Honor's taking care of me good. I'm able to take care of my family. I'm getting to, you know, travel a little bit, see the world. But I'm also getting to be at home with my family a lot. Like, I mean, over the summer, I got to go up and do a tour of Canada. I got to take my family on a couple little vacations. It's been great. So I'm real happy what I'm doing there. And I feel like there's still a lot of stuff I'd like to accomplish there first, you know. And, you know, it starts Friday night. I got to win that TV title. And it's just that step towards the future.
Did you take the family on vacation to that to the glorious city of South St. Paul when I saw you on that indie show?
No.
Good call. And that's coming from someone who has family there. I guess final question here. Well, kind of a two-parter. What's left to accomplish in Ring of Honor for you? You know, who do you want to work? Things like that. And also just kind of an outlook on 2018. What are your goals in 2018?
So goals for 2018 is, first goal is to come into the year being the television champion. I think that'd be a huge way to kick off the year. I'd like to get out and travel more. I'd like to hold that TV title. I'd like to hold that TV title for all of 2018. I'd like to start 2018 and end it the exact same way. And I don't think that's entirely impossible. You know, I feel as like, as far as career goals though, you know, I definitely want to be world champion. I want to win the tag titles with Bruiser. I don't think there's any reason that we can't be tag champions. You know, I feel like there's still a good amount of things there I'd like to try and accomplish, as well as, you know, Ring of Honor has a working agreement with New Japan Pro Wrestling, so I'd like to be able to get back over and do some more stuff for New Japan Pro Wrestling. I got to go over there for my first time this February, so I'm hoping something works out in 2018 as well.
Well, any social media or anything else you want to plug?
Yeah, if you're looking to follow me on social media, you can follow me on Twitter at LastRealManROH. And that's about it. Or you can find t-shirts on ProWrestlingTees.com/SilasYoung. That's about it. I don't have a whole lot of social media stuff.
Well, very good. Ring of Honor Final Battle, Friday night, Fight TV app, also traditional television pay-per-view. Silas will be in the four-way. I will be doing live coverage at ProWrestling.net. Silas, thank you so much for the time.
Thank you for having me on, man.